welcome to this Foot Femme Reflect podcast. I know I say this about every podcast, but this one is actually so exciting. I have been lucky enough to chat to Carol Wilson, who was the captain of the 1971 World Cup squad. She has got some amazing stories about her experiences. I actually had so much fun doing this interview, so thank you so much, Carol, and I hope everyone else enjoys it. Also, just want to say that this year, 2021, marks 50 years since those pioneers played in the 1971 Women's World Cup in Mexico. Let's celebrate that and share their story. How did you actually first get into football?
Well, my dad used to play for Gateshead Youth. Mm-hmm. And so he was quite into football. And when I was a baby, when I was starting to walk, how my dad encouraged me to do it was to bowl the football along a passage. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I wasn't kicking it. I was just shuffling it along. Mm-hmm. But that progressed and progressed and progressed. He used to take me to Sunday league games. Uh-huh. And in the half time, he would play with me, kick the ball backwards and forwards. And then we moved house and we moved nearer the city centre. Mm-hmm. Where we only had back lanes to play in. Mm-hmm. And the only people that lived in our street were boys. There weren't any girls about, so I just carried on playing with them. We moved again when I was about 8, and we moved where there were some playing fields behind us. So that then progressed to, we actually had a goal each. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were only jumpers, but we knew where to aim the ball. I remember as a kiddie even being disappointed then that there wasn't any, you know, facility. Mm-hmm. For girls to play. In fact, we were mocked. If I ever was spotted playing football in the back lane, that was as far back as I was 5. If anybody was looking, I would stand against the wall and pretend I wasn't playing. Because you were looked at, a girl shouldn't be doing that sort of stuff. Uh-huh. You should be pushing a pram around with a doll in it. Well, that was never me.
That was not you. So,
no. Wow. No. We were that poor when we were kids. I mean, really dirt poor. Mm-hmm. My dad used to take us to a place called Leeses Park. Mm-hmm. Which was right next to St James's Newcastle United football ground, and we could never ever ever afford to go in there, so we just used to stand outside and listen to the roar, and I can't tell you the buzz that gave me. And I've remembered that all these years. That poor, we couldn't go in, we just listened to everybody else.
Wow.
Anyway. When I was 14, out of all the schools in Newcastle, there was a handful of girls picked, girls and boys picked. I think there was about 30 places out of all the schools in Newcastle. Mm-hmm. The county. And we were picked to go to a centre of excellence for sport. Mm-hmm. And for a week, a year, every year, mm-hmm. That group of children at that age were selected from the county. Mm-hmm. To go and be coached by all the England coaches in different sports. So, and it was a fantastic week, and I was really looking forward to it, thinking, oh great, I bet football's on the cards, you know, great. Nah, not a bit of it.
Really?
So I was quite disappointed then. And even when I got into the Air Force, nothing.
Wow.
Nothing.
When did you join the Air Force then?
I joined the Air Force when I was 17. It was quite a long training because I trained to be a physical education instructor. And then I was posted to a place called RAF Henlow in Bedfordshire.
Mm-hmm.
Our task was to train officers so they could be fit enough to be able to do a three-week exercise without any sleep. So it was quite rigorous training, you know.
All right, so you were playing from like a very, very young age, like as a baby, as you were saying, and then sort of with the boys as you were growing up. But then once you got to school, there weren't those opportunities.
No facilities at all.
And then it was when you were 17 that you were able to take it back up again.
Yeah. Anyway, I got into it again because I used to play five-a-side with the lads mm-hmm. at Henlow.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I got into it again. One day, I realised that there was a group of girls on the next court, and I thought, oh, they've hired the court out to play netball or something.
Mm-hmm.
We were playing five-a-side, mm-hmm. and it's quite a fast game, five-a-side, so we were running about, and I was concentrating on what I was doing.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'd noticed three or four guys with these girls,
uh-huh.
and when I looked up, partway through their game, an hour game, I saw them playing football and I just stopped in my tracks. I couldn't believe it. Anyway, it wasn't long before three or four these guys
mm-hmm.
come to stand at the edge of our game and they were talking and whispering. And anyway, I didn't think anything of it. And the next day, our fitness officer called me upstairs and he said, he says, I've just had somebody from Luton ring me up. They were scouting yesterday. Would you be interested in going for a trial? Oh. So I thought, oh, it was for a local team, you see. I went over there and I had a trial. And then this guy asked me to... would I play in their Sunday league for a couple of weeks? Because I told them, look, I haven't had any experience playing in a team before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a first. Anyway, I was playing with this team. And with this team, there were quite a few really good players.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen girls play like that before. Mm-hmm. Really good players. Leah being and Chris being two of them, and little Jill Sale. I don't know if you know
yeah.
Jill Sale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there were three that stood out. Anyway, I went back to camp and I said to one of the girls in the WAF block, hey, there's a girls' football team, because I knew she was into football. Do you fancy going for a game? You know, we went along, and it wasn't long before Harry Batt said to, who was a manager,
uh-huh.
said to me, look, we've got I'm trying to get together an England team.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to get some funding to take us to Sicily
mm-hmm.
so that we could play for this England team he was putting together
mm-hmm.
from people from different parts of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And would I be interested in going? And I thought, God, you know... Wait till I tell my dad. I told my dad, but I didn't really know enough about it at that stage, to be honest. It was all a bit pie in the sky.
Yeah.
We may or may not get there because of the funding and like this. Transpays, he said, oh, Martini Rossi is going to sponsor us to go to Sicily. So we went to Sicily, and to be honest, I think I can only remember playing the Austrians and the Sicilians.
Mm-hmm.
But I know there was a third game. Anyway, we won all of our games.
Oh.
And we won them with ease. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't. So we got back and beautiful memories out there. Mm-hmm. Absolutely fantastic memories. We toured Sicily.
Wow.
There was two or three of us asked to play for Italian teams.
Wow.
But before I went out there, I had to go up to the Ministry of Defence for clearance for a debrief.
Uh-huh.
And I was told that I had to pretend I was a teacher from Liverpool. Why Liverpool with this accent? I don't know. Not to talk to anybody about anything to do with the Air Force, you see.
Okay.
So that's just what I did. Of course, when I was approached to play for, I think it was Juventus, professionally, but I couldn't because I was
a teacher.
Well, not only that, I'd signed up for the Air Force for God knows how many years. So I think it was 9 years I'd signed up for. So we went to Sicily, we won all the games, we came back, and Harry just said, oh, I think, you know, I don't think this is on the cards. And then he dropped the thing about Mexico, you see. He said, no, he said, they won't go for that. He said, it's just pie in the sky. And he was, you know, poo-hawing it off. Uh-huh. Anyway, he rang me up a couple of weeks later and he said, Carol, you never guess what. I said, what? He said, you never guess what? He said, they've gone for it. We've actually got the funding. We're going.
Wow.
And I was like, what? Anyway, it weren't long after that we went. And I remember, the only thing I can remember about it is the night before we were guests at Luton v Man United. Mm-hmm. And it was at Luton. Mm-hmm. And I was privileged to be able to watch Dennis Law, Bobby Charlton,
wow,
George Best, Nobby Styles, all on the same pitch.
Oh,
so I was mesmerized. I was just like, oh my God, I was in heaven. Jean Brecken was the other girl that was in the RAF with me.
Mm-hmm.
We'd gone to train. This is how I became captain. Well, I'm assuming it's how I became captain. Harry never said, mm-hmm, categorically, but the timing was enough to make me realise that why I'd done it.
Mm-hmm.
We'd gone to train one night at this Luton ground.
Mm-hmm.
Jean was there, and Harry hadn't arrived at the ground. So we were just having a mess about on the field.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was Jean had just got engaged.
Oh.
And she was in goal. Mm-hmm. Now, in the Air Force, I'd mentioned this to Harry before. I saw a lot of the girls with jewellery on.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not allowed to wear jewellery in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. You have to take it all off because we're all too aware,
mm-hmm,
or we were all too aware of the accidents that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Jean jumped up for the ball. She caught a ring on the hook attachment and took her finger clean off. Somebody rushed to a house nearby for a bag of peas, and we got a finger and put them in the peas until the ambulance got there. But she lost it. She lost her finger. So, The next weekend after that, Harry asked me if I'd A, train the team, be their fitness coach, and be captain at the same time. But we had a technical coach called Ken Caves.
Mm-hmm.
He used to train the guys with regards to offsides and the best moves and all that. But it wasn't anything technical like you see these days with the television. It was just a chat and, he'd come round somebody's house. It wasn't anything formal, as it were, like today these days. I knew there was some ruckus with the FA before we went.
Mm-hmm.
Some bad vibes coming from the FA. I didn't know an awful lot about it because there was a lot of bad feeling between Harry and the FA. He tried so long, for so hard to get a woman's team.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't having any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a bit of undertones before we went out there.
Mm-hmm.
A few undertones. So anyway, we get on the plane. And off we go. I can't remember any reporters seeing us off. In fact, I can't remember anybody seeing us off, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I really can't. We got on a jumbo jet to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got a smaller plane down to Mexico City from New York. We were just about to disembark. We were all getting our stuff out the overheads. We saw this sea of floodlights and flashlights. And Chris was 3 or 4 rows down from me. And I heard a voice saying, "Hey, yeah." He said, there must be somebody really important on this plane. Anyway, we all started filing down and all these flashlights kept going off. And I'm thinking, God, what's maybe the FA ruck is a bit more than I thought. anyway, we get off the plane, and I'm asked to give an interview in the airport. That was the first sign of, and, oh, there were screaming fans.
What?
It was like, it was almost like we were the Beatles, honest to God. And that, we thought that was bad enough at the airport. So we get in the airport, and along with Harry, we gave separate interviews, but he was asked to be interviewed, and then I was asked to be interviewed. It's quite a long interview. So, there was a coach waiting for us. We got in the coach, and we had a police car in front, a police car behind us, and an outrider either side.
Wow.
And we didn't realise just why that was until we pulled out onto the dual carriageway outside of the airport.
Uh-huh.
And the whole route was lined. The whole route was lined. There were throwing things at the coach.
Wow.
And I'm closing the windows, thinking, because all the windows were open when we got out there, it was boiling hot.
Uh-huh.
It was nighttime, but it was really warm. So I'm closing the windows, thinking, there's something going to hit us in a minute. But they were throwing presents at the coach.
Oh, my God.
And the fans were amazing. I mean, they were truly, they were climbing over each other to get to us. It was the weirdest thing, honestly. We were all like, what? What?
Wow.
Oh, God. We were given a really good training ground, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought we were celebrities because the whole lining of the training ground was all along the sidelines. There were people coming to watch us train.
Wow.
And we thought, oh my God, we are celebrities, you know. Not that any of us took it all seriously, because we were kids, really. We were kids.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't understand the enormity of it, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But we did loads of things out there, opening supermarkets, toy stores.
Really?
We did loads of stuff. We were on telly, we were on radio stations. We went up to the Aztecs. We went to a place called Xochimilco.
Uh-huh.
We entertained all the other teams at the British Embassy. That was a posh do. Anyway, we had such a great time. The games, when we played Argentina, I think we lost 4-1 to them.
Uh-huh.
And that was a really tough game. That was probably the toughest game I played. I think it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was dull and overcast, but it was quite warm.
Mm-hmm.
We played all our games in the Aztec Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a privilege to walk onto the Aztec Stadium in the first instance.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm honest, there was probably about, I would say, might have been about 30,000 there, which was an awful lot for us.
Mm-hmm.
Bearing in mind, we used to have sitting along the sidelines on a Sunday league game, yeah. And the pitch was used to be like that. It used to be uphill and downhill with big holes in the middle. You were lucky if you got a straight ball, it used to hit off these holes. So it was nice to have a level pitch, and it was especially nice to know I've been in the Aztec Stadium.
Yeah.
I took look the pictures with it being empty, because
uh-huh.
I was so chuffed to just be in there. I think there was only two professional teams at the time, and that was France and Italy. The others, although they weren't professional, they played together time and time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first time. In fact, I hadn't played. There's a girl called Jill Stockley. I hadn't played with her in a team at all.
Wow.
Or Louise from Southampton. I hadn't played with her at all. And to have got that far in the World Cup, we didn't win any of our games, but to me that wasn't important. To me, it was the taking part.
Yeah.
That was, and I know that sounds a bit of a cliche. I don't mean it in that sense. I just mean, I think we were so not lucky, because we earned our way,
mm-hmm.
but we were so privileged mm-hmm. to have made it so far,
mm-hmm.
even although we didn't win our games. That's what I'm trying to say, yeah. I'd actually broken my foot in that game. I don't feel now it was a, you know, untoward thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just think, damn, it hurt. It bloody hurts. I'd forgotten all about that because Harry pulled me to one side and he said, you've just got to go up to the stadium again. This was the Aztec Stadium. So I said, oh, why? And he said, well, you see when you get there. Anyway, I went into the Aztec Stadium and we had to wait in the middle of the pitch. And there was myself, Harry, I think Ken Cave's come with us as well. And the referees that were going to referee our next match, which was Mexico. And who should walk on the pitch but Franz Beckenbauer. So I was so privileged to have met him. And it was supposed to be a whistle stop tour. He was only supposed to be staying about 5 minutes, but he was there about 15 minutes.
Wow.
So I come back and I thought, I don't know whether I should tell them, because if I tell them, they're going to be mega, mega annoyed with me that it was me and not them. The most enjoyable match I played in the whole series was Mexico,
mm-hmm.
because they were, it was 12 o'clock midday,
mm-hmm.
and the sun was... Well, it was like walking into an oven. It really was. It was like walking into an oven. Now, they say there's been loads of different reports about how many people that were there. But when we were there, I remember the gates saying they'd taken 97,000.
Oh, my God.
And that is... And when we first went in, even in the sitting in the coach, we could hear the screams and the shouts. And when we got there, the roar, God's truth. And I remember actually thinking at the time, this is what I remember from the roar, going back to when I was the kid and standing a little bit more than the roar then. But it was God, it was. And I remember a couple of the girls went into the loos. And they come back and they said there was a window and they were looking out. There was like a little slant window, you know, and they could look outside and see that. And they said, come back and said, you don't want to see what's out there. I remember going out, leading the girls out of the tunnel. And first of all, you come out in the corner and you see, I suppose you see straight opposite, yeah. And I was thinking back to the Argentina match, and I thought, oh, there'll be loads of gaps of seats, mm-hmm. you know, not a bit of it. I saw very few seats that time, very few seats. And for a fleeting moment, I think, just for a fleeting moment, I was terrified.
What, yeah?
I really wanted to, yeah, without a doubt. My legs went like jelly.
I bet.
I was thinking, all of a sudden, what we'd done or what we were doing hit me, it struck me. And then I thought, well, I can't sit and cry. I've got to shout these girls on. That's what I felt like doing. God, just for a fleeting moment. And then it kicked in and just enjoy the game and like that. And although we lost 4-0 to the Mexicans, it was a very close game, and I think the reason the stadium was packed was we seemed to have an affinity with the Mexican people. Yeah. Obviously, they're going to support their team,
mm-hmm.
but I think they were also there to see us as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the encouragement we got, honestly, from them, even while we were playing, was amazing, absolutely amazing. And I was really lucky that I could play the whole game with this foot, because I was in agony.
You played that match, the Mexico match, you played that with a broken foot?
Yeah. But, you know, it sounds awful, broken foot, but they're very tiny bones.
Yeah.
They do hurt a lot, these tiny bones. I'm not kidding you.
Well, it sounds like such an incredible experience, especially what you were saying, like the Mexican people just loved you, didn't they?
Oh, without a doubt. They made a cake, the hotel people, within a couple of days, they seemed like family, because the women, it was a family-run place, uh-huh. and the women really looked after it. They really did. They were absolutely amazing. And when we were due to leave, they made a cake, and it said something like, you may have lost your game, but you've won the hearts of the Mexican people or something. It was lovely. Really nice.
Nice. Oh my gosh, what an amazing experience.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Happy, happy days. I didn't see anybody or hear from anybody for it was 48 years. I tried contacting people. I couldn't contact people. Their names had changed. My name had changed.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really depressed, really, that I couldn't contact them because we had such good memories together. I gave up football because I had a husband who wasn't keen on me playing. That was the first obstacle.
Mm-hmm.
I was just newly married. So when I first came back, the local TV people had got in touch with me and said, there's a Newcastle United are having a night of celebration at the Gosford Park Hotel, and they've asked if you'll attend.
Oh.
So I went along to, I took my dad.
Uh-huh.
We went along to this function. My dad wasn't really a socialite. He was a very shy, quiet man.
Mm-hmm.
He spilt a pint of Guinness over Ron Guthrie, who was a Newcastle United player at the time, a very good one, very good looking one. And he had a beige suit and he spilt a pint of Guinness over his suit. So that was the first little obstacle at the night. And then the compere asked me to go on stage, and here I was limping on stage with me plaster caps.
Yeah.
He had a good laugh at me and made out that every game, every time I tried to talk, he talked over me. And he made out every game was a bun fight. So I come off the stage really humiliated, and I vowed never to play another game again. I never, ever spoke about it, not even to my family, never spoke about it again, ever.
Wow.
Then I got a phone call about, well, actually, it's nearly 2 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
The phone rang, and this guy called Ian Youngs. And he said, I'm Ian Youngs, I work for the BBC, blah, blah, blah. Would you be in? I said, no. he said, well, just hear me out first. He said, if I tell you Chris Lockwood has spoken to me and she's recommended that I speak to you, that I ring you. And I thought, Chris Lockwood, has he been in touch with one of the other team? I was amazed.
Wow.
So anyway, I spoke to him, and he arranged for me to meet with Chris at Luton,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was really nice of him, really nice. Unbeknownst to me, he got all of the team together, bar one, which I was amazed at, absolutely amazed at. And they were all, I was supposed to just be going to meet Chris.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I got to this football ground at Luton. We got out of the car, and she said, we'll just do an interview on the field first. When I saw Chris, and I was, oh, God, you know, I was tears and
oh.
Anyway. And all, and then they said, oh, well, if you're really happy to meet Chris, I'm sure you're happy to meet the rest of the team. And they all found out. I was overwhelmed. It was just overwhelming. So last year we went to see Germany play England in a, I think it was a friendly.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Wembley. That was an invite from the FA. We were really surprised at that. God, but now I know why they wanted us there, because we were supposed to be going up there to be recognised. That's what they said. And when we got up there, we were kept in this, when I say kept, I don't mean jailed, but they kept us sort of contained in this suite that we were wined and dined at. But it was their way, I think, of being able to say to the press that, you know, they'd had us up, they'd invited us.
Mm.
But they still haven't recognised us. And I am absolutely appalled. I think it's a crime. I really do. Anyway. My dad, you know, he so wanted to shout it from the rooftops.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just sad. I'm really sad that he didn't, because he kept saying to me all the years afterwards, don't worry, girl, it'll come out.
Mm-hmm.
The truth always comes out. Don't you worry, don't you worry. But sadly, he passed away before he saw it happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, you know now.
Yeah. Well, it has been a real pleasure chatting to you. So interesting. Right. I've loved it.
That's all right.
I just want to add something extra here, and these are Carol's words, but I know she speaks on behalf of the 71 team and of all the girls and women that Harry Batt worked with. And that's just to say how highly she held Harry Batt, who was an extremely intelligent man. He could have spent his later years doing any amount of things, but he chose women's football. And thank goodness, because without his enthusiasm and that of his wife, June, they probably would have never had the experience that they had. Carol says she often looks back on some of the things he said, and he used to drive them all nuts. But what a man he was.